Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, do you ever wake up now that we're getting a little bit older and find that you just have a random body part that hurts?
Yes, I've had that happen, unfortunately.
Like this morning, I woke up and my knee hurts for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
None at all.
Did you jump over the boards?
Yeah. I jumped over the boards and fell on my face, and once again, I have another freak, unexplainable injury. Yeah, my knee is swollen, and like it's so bizarre. I'm not sure how I feel about this. And we're not that old, but it's
old
happening.
Enough.
It's happening.
Yeah.
I was talking to a guy last weekend who had excessive ear hair, and now I'm worried about that.
Yeah.
I'd like to think my wife's going to tell me when that starts to happen.
I think that's why we have wives. Is to tell us things like that.
Can we make a pact that if you notice that, will you say something to you?
Yes.
Like, dude, ear hair.
Yeah, I will.
Because I don't want that. Because that was, it was kind of like, reminded me like going to the aquarium and seeing like those rocks with like the flowers like coming out of it.
Right.
Or like Fraggle Rock. Like, yeah. the Fraggles with the hair on top, dude. It was weird.
So maybe we need like a code word for that, dude. Like an ear hair code word.
Maybe it's what would be a good hairy code word? Who's the hairiest hockey player you can think of? Peros.
Yeah.
Peros, dude.
Yeah.
And then you just.
Yeah. Then you get the.
We will not trim each other's ear hair because that is crossing a dude line.
That's weird.
That is weird.
That's just weird.
What a weird way to start the podcast, dude. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas. Everyone thinks of the holidays and thinks of ear hair.
Hey, everybody needs funny gifts to give each other. It's Merry Christmas Eve, dude.
Dude,
and
yes,
we're still
it is.
Having the podcast.
We are. Nothing will stop us except for a vacation, which
right.
is what we're going to be on next week as we take our wives on the annual Mecca back east.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll, of course, be going to the NHL store.
Absolutely.
We may be having a rendezvous with Mr. EJ Raddick. We're not sure.
It could happen.
It could happen. It could not. Last time we were thwarted by the blizzard.
That's right.
But hopefully we will say hello to podcast friend EJ Raddick in person. And we have all kinds of fun stuff planned while we're out there, dude. And then, of course, you know where I'm going after that.
Yeah.
Mississippi.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what I'm going to do?
River Kings?
Yep. River Kings game.
Rock on, dude.
River Kings game, New Year's Eve. Another tradition. Gotta
nice.
Go to the River Kings. You can get seats right behind the glass for like $10.
Sweet.
Why not?
Why wouldn't you?
Why not? I love the hecklers at those games.
Because everybody in the arena can hear you.
Yeah. And they're like good old boys, like sitting there in like their overalls. And the guy gets in the box. He's all, oh, you done a bad thing. it's like Deliverance meets hockey. It's cool.
Yeah. That is pretty cool.
Bring it, dude.
Dude, speaking of bringing it.
Yeah.
Sharks been bringing it.
Yeah. Yeah, they have. Two wins.
Another two wins, dude.
And looking pretty good in the process, especially on Wednesday night against Tampa Bay. I guess we should probably start there.
Yeah, 5 goals to start the game, 5 goals in the first 15 minutes. I'm having difficulty remembering a beatdown like that. Of course, we beat Phoenix opening night very badly. 6-3 was the overall score, I believe. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't we put a 5 spot on the board first and then Phoenix responds.
I'm remembering right, from listening to Dan Rusinowski on the way home that night, I think he said that's the first time that's happened at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Sharks did that in Chicago one year when the Blackhawks were especially bad. I think they did that in Chicago, but at home, that was the first time they'd scored that many goals in a period to start a game. So it was quite a laugher, for a while.
It was.
Garon looked terrible, but the Sharks also looked awesome. And
right.
Tampa Bay... What happened to Tampa Bay? They look a shambles, dude.
Talk about the surprise of the season. I mean, this is a team that made the Eastern Conference Finals last year, don't forget, with essentially the same team. No Sean Bergenheim?
No Sean Bergenheim, no Simone Gagné.
Right.
They're missing bit parts.
That's not a key part. I mean, with a team with Stamkos, Le Cavalier, Marty St. Louis, Ryan Malone,
right.
Victor Hedman on the back end, you don't say, oh, well, the reason they went downhill is because Simone Gagné didn't play his requisite 30 games.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mystery, I guess, or they just played completely over their heads. It was the Edmonton Oilers syndrome,
mm-hmm.
where they had no business being there in the first place. They were a surprise team for sure last year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at some of their players, like Victor Hedman, like watching him play on Wednesday night. What's the big deal, dude? Like, I don't understand it. Like,
right.
highly touted second pick. He looks like the second coming of Jay Bomeister, and I don't mean that as a compliment. Like, I mean yeah. that as another player that you hear how good he is, but you see him in person, and I don't see it.
Not that great. Victor Hedman's still young. Keep money went straight to the NHL, and if we want to talk about a guy who went straight to the NHL as a very young player and is even coming into his own only 3 or 4 years later, which is Marc-Edouard Vlasic, who I think Jamie Baker picked as the number one star last night.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the quality of his game has improved by leaps and bounds over the past 2 or 3 years, and he would have been in the league for 2 or 3 years before that. So,
right.
You know, defensemen, people say it takes a long time for them to mature. Not everybody can just jump into the league and immediately start kicking butt. And looks like Victor Hedman's got plenty of size. He's got some ability. He just hasn't quite found his way yet. And Tampa Bay just, they don't have a whole lot of help for him. I think their defense is a more of a weakness than their offense right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not good. It's either, you know, old and immobile, like, Pavel Kabina.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he looked terrible.
Right.
When you even noticed him, like, I mean, right. and he wasn't hardly noticeable, you know, during the game. But when you saw him, it just didn't look good. Brewer was constantly getting used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that team's no good. You know, they're going to need to start selling some parts. And actually, there's a few guys on there I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, at the deadline you might be able to get for cheap. You know, one guy who did stand out to me was a player that, you know his name, and you never really see much of him, as a guy like Adam Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, good penalty killer,
mm-hmm.
Real aggressive, tried to start a fight with someone at some point. You know, he didn't, the game's, you know, 6-1 or whatever, and he
yeah.
certainly never gave up. You know, he was sort of their Jamie McGinn, a little bit more experienced. Like, that's the type of guy that you could see at the deadline, Tampa Bay trading someone like that for like a 4th or a 5th round pick. Like,
right.
I wouldn't mind. I'm keeping an eye on him,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
I'm just throwing out that out, a little foreshadowing, a little Christmas foreshadowing.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right?
Yes, that's a good observation, dude, because that game was just more or less go to the game and enjoy the night. Just
right.
A lot of times, certainly the quality of the game wasn't great in the second and third periods. It wasn't a game that you were glued to the edge of your seat, to mix metaphors.
Hmm.
And it was just, the fun part was watching the Sharks just completely overwhelm them in the first 15 minutes of the game, yeah. and then you could just sort of coast their
yeah.
way in.
Yeah. Last night was a little different, you know, against the Kings, now led by former Sharks coach Daryl Sutter. They already were a defense-first team, and now they certainly are still
mm-hmm.
playing by that motto, a defense-first team. I thought it was a pretty exciting game for not having a ton of shots in the first period, actually barely any at all.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was pretty back and forth. It really opened up for a while in the third. They were trading punches. Sharks played well, but it was definitely a Kings style of game, right?
That's right. Yeah, Daryl Sutter is finally starting to implement his system, or at least certain tactical clues you can see where they're playing defense first, right? You see Matt Green in his own end, behind his own goal line quite a bit. This is Sutter hockey, basically. And the problem is, I think, as Jamie Baker noted in a quote, in a tweet before the game, that the Kings haven't scored more than 2 goals in like their last 10 games or something like that. And they've won a couple of them. But, you know, the fact is, if you don't score more than two goals ever, then you're not going to be very successful in this league, because there's a lot of teams that can put up 3 goals, Sharks right. included.
Right.
Actually, they didn't have to put up 3. They only put up 2, and they still won, and won in the shootout. So the Kings still are going to have some major trouble if they can't get Kopitar hot. Kopitar is even more dangerous than I remember him. He can just sort of find open space anywhere. So it is scary to watch him work, as scary as anybody else in the West right now, I think. So, but yet it's not enough. Simone Gagné now on the Kings, right? I didn't notice him hardly at all.
Yeah.
So there's not too many offensive sparks that you see. You see Drew Doughty a little bit on the offensive side of the puck. You see Kopitar pretty much every time he touches the puck. Dustin Penner, non-factor. Jason Williams, pretty good.
Yeah.
But everybody else, it's just sort of a wash.
Yeah, their top two lines don't compare to ours. Mm-mm. You know, they just don't. I mean, they've got two players that are very good in that top six with Richards and Kopitar, and then the wingers are fine, you know, but they're mm-hmm. not anywhere close to the wingers we have. I don't think you'd pick any one of their four wingers over the four guys we've got in the top six, right?
Right.
And all of them are better. And it's showing right now. They can't score, and I hope they can't fix it. That's certainly right. The hope. But we saw how dangerous that team was last year in the playoffs when they were playing right in front of a very good goalie. They didn't have Kopitar, and they still gave us some problems.
I think Quick actually technically had a goalie steal. I think he only gave up one goal in the game and 35 saves. So Quick, again, very, very good, as mm-hmm. he always seems to be against the Sharks. And it took the shootout for the Sharks to actually beat him.
Yeah, it comes down to Klo again.
Again.
Some really ugly shootout shots by the Sharks until it got to Klo. I don't know what happened. And dude, I know you didn't see it, but I'm wondering if any of the other listeners saw this, that as Dan Boyle's approaching, and he didn't do his, you know, head, like triple head fake this yeah. time. Just kind of looking for that. But as Dan Boyle is approaching Quick, Torrey Mitchell ends up on the ice. Like he's on the ice in front of the bench. And I don't understand what happened.
Yeah.
And I
didn't see it.
It was almost like he thought he was shooting. Like it was weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of caught it out of the corner of my eye, and then he quickly got off. But I wondered if Boyle had scored, would that goal have been disallowed because the Sharks had too many guys on the ice?
I don't know. I don't know what the procedure is for that.
I don't know either. I was confused by what had happened there, but it ended up not mattering. Sharks win. Everyone goes home happy. Pretty important win, I think, to go into Christmas with that good feeling. Four wins in a row, points in five straight.
Mm-hmm.
That loss in St. Louis is a distant memory.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're ahead of the Pacific Division again. And this is the time, dude. This next stretch of games, they've got to pull away before the Kings figure it out.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they're going to figure out the scoring thing, because they haven't really been great at that all year. So I hope they just continue to put up one and two spots, and that's all they can do.
Well, that's not going to get them back in the playoff picture. So we certainly hope that the Sharks will be able to pull away. When you look at the schedule, dude, they've got some tough games. They've got back-to-backs against Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
you know, the last game in 2011, and happy 2012, you're playing Vancouver again. But, you know, Ducks twice, Columbus, you've got the two worst teams in hockey.
Right.
You know, you've got three games against them. You got to get 6 points there. And Washington's been as Jekyll and Hyde as they come.
Mm-hmm.
They're, and when they come to San Jose, we always beat the snot out of them.
Right.
So hopefully that will continue. And then, you know, a game in Minnesota, in Winnipeg, in Columbus. It's an opportunity here, dude.
Yeah, I agree.
In the next 3 weeks, there's an opportunity.
Pull away from Dallas, who always manages to hang on somehow.
Try and get an 8 to 10 point lead in the Pacific Division by the end of January. I think it's important because...
I think 8 to 10 is a little optimistic.
Dude, I'm saying I'm shooting for the moon, dude.
Good.
I just want a 4 point lead.
I just want a 2 point
lead. Just a 2 point lead, please. All I want is another Pacific Division banner. It's all I want.
Please, no.
Please.
Dude, let's talk about more Sharks news. So the Havlat injury is now understood. I was right in that it was serious. I was wrong in that it was a knee. It turns out to be a partially torn hamstring. Havlat will be out for 2 months.
Yeah.
Great blooper video. Not really.
Not really anymore. It's not funny anymore. You know,
mm-hmm.
it is sad. for him, you know, because it seemed like he was starting to get some chemistry with Hanzus on the third line. You know, the Sharks have really moved him around a lot. They don't seem to be very happy with where he was fitting in, although he started off so well, mm-hmm. you know, and now they seem to have settled on a second line with Marleau, Couture, and Clough that continues to be the Sharks' best line. But without Havlat, now you've got Ben Ferriero skating on the top line, and mm-hmm. Ferriero had an impact on Wednesday night against Tampa Bay. Scores the first goal. He's going to get a shot here, you know, with Ben Ferriero in town. This is kind of his last stand, right, dude? His last guaranteed stand.
It's a lot of last stands for a lot of people, because the other big news is Ninimaki's back. He was recalled from Worcester after a conditioning stint where he had two good games and then one game where he sort of got shelled. According to Sharks page, he was pretty much hung out to dry on a lot of those. So I think his stats really dipped in that third game, but the first two games, his stats were pretty sparkling. So now we have Ninimaki, who's subjected to waivers if he goes back down. We have Ferriero, who's subjected to waivers if he goes back down. And Thomas Greiss, who is subjected to waivers if he goes back down. So,
and also Fraser McLaren's in that mix, too.
That's
right.
You
know, I don't think it's a guarantee that he's going to be on this team much longer, just financial reasons.
That's true. So the Ninimaki question is the big one, though, because now the Sharks are carrying three goalies, which is pretty rare in the NHL. You don't usually see that very often. So the question is, what are the Sharks going to do goalie-wise here? Niemi's obviously the starter. He's been playing well. So who do you back him up? Do you let Greiss ride the pine and send down Nitti, or what do you do?
Well, dude, this is just dude hunch here. Mm-hmm. But I think in the next 2 weeks, we're going to see Ninimaki play twice.
Uh-huh.
I think he's going to, if I had to guess, he'll draw one of the Ducks games and, you know, he might draw one of the Columbus games.
Okay.
You know, give him a few softballs, right?
Sure.
And see how he looks. And hopefully he looks great. And then you have to make a decision if he looks great for you or if he's going to look good enough for someone to be interested in trading for him. My gut says no one's going to want him at mm-hmm. that price tag.
Right. That's the big thing. He's making $2 million, and plenty of backup goalies can come a lot cheaper.
Right.
Exhibit A being Thomas Greiss.
Right. So, you know, who has more trade value? Definitely Greiss. But you could also see a lot of GMs pulling a Doug Wilson on Doug Wilson and sort of daring him to make his move. You know, who mm-hmm. are you going to waive? You know, are you really going to go with Greiss, who has limited NHL experience on a team that has serious cup aspirations? Or are you going to, you know, waive Ninimaki and eat the money? You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And or are you going to take the money and let it sit on the books with Ninimaki and waive a young goalie who you have signed for another year? It's a tough decision, you know? What are you thinking?
I don't think it's that tough.
Oh, yeah?
I think Ninimaki is the odd man out in this uh-huh. situation. You clear $2 million from the cap. If you can, you do. I agree with you in the first part. You play him a couple games. Maybe you give him a little bit of confidence. You showcase him a little bit for other GMs around the league. You put the feelers out, see if somebody wants him. And if they don't, you put him back down to the minors.
Yeah.
And you save the money. And Thomas Greiss is perfectly capable. I think that's what you do. And then maybe you bring him up in the playoffs as a black ace.
I think that's definitely scenario A, you know. Scenario B is that Doug Wilson is not willing to do that because he believes this team's going to win a cup. And if he believed in Thomas Greiss at all the first time, he never would have banished him to Europe in the first place. I mean, Thomas Greiss has already been jettisoned by this team once.
Yeah, I guess so.
So why isn't he going to be jettisoned a second time?
He's proven himself. He has some pretty good numbers this year. He's got a better goals against or better save percentage than Niemi right now.
Right, right. I'm wondering if Doug Wilson's going to have the confidence in sending Greiss on a cup run with the Sharks. Like, I don't know. I don't know. The Sharks certainly have a glut of young goalie prospects.
Yeah, it's a real traffic jam.
Someone's got to go. I think it can't be someone just sits in Worcester Like, what? No, so Nidamaki gets sent down, and he's sitting there outside of Boston,
right,
you know, eating sardines out of a can or whatever it is he's
Chowda.
Doing. And
Chowda.
And he's pissed, right? He's sitting in the HL again. He's not playing. Mm-hmm. So you're going to cannibalize Sexsmith's development and Sateri by having Nidamaki sit down there?
Probably not, no. You drop him too. You sit him on the bench. Why not?
Well, wouldn't the Sharks try and do what other teams have done with their veteran players, like, example, Edmonton, where they didn't want Surrey at Oklahoma City, so he got loaned out to another AHL team.
And I think that's possible.
And so Nitti would be playing. So you want him to be playing.
Just not for the Sharks.
Well, not at that money.
Right.
You know? If they were making the same money, this is an easy call. You keep Nidamaki.
Right.
But they're not. It's, what, four times the money, right, dude?
Yeah. It's too much.
It's too much. You got to make the tough move, dude. I agree. Nidamaki, in the next 2 to 3 weeks, he won't be on the team anymore.
And the loaner thing is interesting because I always forget about that. And I remember when someone got loaned, and it wasn't... it was Michael Nylander, maybe?
Yes.
He got loaned to Florida or something.
Yes.
And I remember being shocked. I didn't even know that was allowed. So it's possible. I didn't know that was available. You see it happen in the Premiership, in the English Premier League football, yeah, a lot, but you don't see it in hockey. So I guess that's possible. I've never heard of the Sharks actually loaning a player to another team before. This might be a first.
Yeah, I think this would be a first. But it's not like they're loaning them to the National Hockey League side of it. Like the Florida Panthers had no rights to Nylander. They just, their AHL team was using him, yeah, as a player. So just something to keep an eye on, dude.
Okay. Dude, what else do we want to hit now?
Well, I think we should talk about something now that your other favorite sport is going on, the NBA.
Oh,
I know how much you love it. It starts tomorrow on Christmas.
Sweet.
The Warriors are going to be awesome this year.
And by awesome, you mean sucks.
Something that they did during this lockout that ended up being part of what the new collective bargaining agreement is.
You mean the sexual harassment thing?
No.
Oh.
Dude, that's different.
Oh, okay, excuse me. Did I just derail your train
no.
of thought?
No, dude. Okay. No, I thought of a dirty joke, but I'm not going to say it.
Okay, good.
So, anyways, the NBA has this thing called the Amnesty Clause now. So for mm-hmm. the next two seasons, the team can one time, from what I understand, buy out a player. And they have to pay them their full salary, but it doesn't count against the cap at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, for the NHL, we do have this. It's a buyout, but the team is penalized on the cap for going through the buyout process.
Mm-hmm.
As we're looking at the NHL redoing their CBA, but to remember, next season,
mm-hmm.
right now, there's no CBA.
Right.
So the lockout looms again.
Mm-hmm.
We hope that the NHL will learn from their past mistakes and see also how devastating it was to the NFL and the NBA this year. It was very difficult. They're not going to go through that. Is this something you'd like to see adopted in lieu of the current buyout process? Each team gets one opportunity to erase a mistake instead of an annual opportunity to erase a mistake, but then they're penalized on their cap.
Well, the thing is that the structure, I think, changed from 57 or 58% of gross revenues down to 50.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty big change. That's a pretty big cut in overall salary. So I think you sort of have to give a pressure release valve for teams to get rid of these heavy contracts. And so I think that's what I see sort of maybe as the impetus behind them adding the amnesty clause. So if the same sort of thing happened in the new CBA, say if the NHL, like, you know, cut the salary cap way down, then I think you'd have to give the team some mechanism to get rid of some overpriced players. And so an amnesty clause would make sense. But keep in mind what the buyout is. You buy out a player for 2/3 of their salary, and then it's amortized over twice the remaining years of the contract. So if you buy out a guy and he's making $1 million next year, then you're only paying him like $300,000 for the next 2 years. So it's not like it's a big onerous weight on the teams to buy out under the current system. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't really change it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that one thing that may change would be what might be termed the Wade-Redden clause, which is, you know, basically dumping huge contracts in the minors. Jeff Finger is another player. And I think that right now there's zero cap consequences to doing that. As long as he clears waivers, then he's getting paid his $6 million to play for Rochester or whoever. And I could definitely see that changing.
Right.
Well, I would see that being more important than some sort of amnesty clause.
So you could see that that would not be allowed, that a player could not be sent down, like once you reach a certain service time?
Or maybe you can say if he's on a one-way contract and you send him down, then you still take a piece of that hit. Almost like a buyout. Let's say you take a third of his cap hit if you send him down to the minors. So Wade Redden, they're paying him $6 million, but they still got to take a $2 million cap hit if he's playing for Rochester. Mm-hmm. Less than $6 million if he's playing on the big club, but still, it's gonna sting a little bit. So that's why signing these guys to, you know, million, trillion-dollar, you know, 20-year deals, you got to start thinking down the road time, and 5 years from now, this guy may actually kind of suck, and I may not want to actually pay him $8 million a year. So, you know, that may have the result of maybe shortening some of these contracts.
Might not even be next down the road. It could be next year.
It could be.
With Wade Redden, we could rename it the Nidamaki provision too, based on what might happen here in the coming weeks, dude. Let's talk about the Sharks holiday video and the Blackhawks holiday video, dude.
Yeah.
Have you seen them?
I've seen them.
And?
I think the Sharks one is really funny. I enjoyed the fact that they bag on Jamie McGinn mercilessly.
Which... it is funny. It's about 5 minutes too long. It is. It's like 10 minutes.
It's long.
It's so long. There are some... They could have used a little trim.
Yeah. You do teach a video class, don't
it
you?
It was.
You could have used a little editing.
It was.
Final Cut Pro.
They could have used a little editing. I think if they had edited it like really tightly and... just kept the really good jokes instead of them awkwardly like pausing in between each segment.
Yeah.
I think it could have been amazing. Instead, it was funny.
Dude, I think you're challenging yourself.
You want me to re-edit their video?
Do you teach a Final Cut Pro class, dude?
Not anymore, but I have.
You have? You have a copy of Final Cut. I think you should... Dude,
well, you're backing me in a corner here, dude.
I am. I think you
should.
Like,
I have oodles of free time.
I know.
Don't you know I'm carrying a child?
That's a food baby, dude. You had Mexican for lunch.
Damn it.
I don't know. I think that would actually be a pretty funny idea.
Okay.
I think you should recut it. But right, anyway.
I might do it.
I'm going to leave that up to you.
Okay, thank you.
But I agree. It was a little bit too long. And the Chicago video, for those who haven't seen it, is basically just a copy of what the Sharks did last year, which is some satirical holiday album with players singing... regular traditional Christmas song,
right? And this got way more publicity than what the Sharks did last year. It's everywhere,
and it's half as funny,
right?
And twice as dumb. And most of the players like barely even contribute. Like, you see all the major Sharks stars last year singing verses, whole verses of these songs, right? With wacky lyrics, totally out of key, out of tempo, just, you know, cringeworthy type singing. And then you see Jonathan Toews, and then like the background singers sing like, Jonathan Toews is really serious, and then he holds up his jersey, and then they cut to somebody else.
Yeah.
And it's like, thanks for putting out the effort, Jonathan Toews. I mean, maybe they left it on the cutting room floor, for all I know.
The biggest loser in that video is Patrick Kane.
Why am I not shocked?
Because, dude, I mean, like, he's like thumbs upping it, and like, you know, giving like the finger guns, and like, dude,
he's like Michael Bublé.
Yeah. My favorite. Who's your favorite?
Brian Bickle.
Yeah,
that was my favorite because he has like 30 seconds of screen time, and I keep waiting for him to sing something, and then at the very end they sing a song. They're like, la la la, Brian Bickle, or whatever it is, and then he's like, yeah, and then they cut to somebody else, and I'm like, what the?
My favorite definitely was Sean O'Donnell.
Yeah, Sean O'Donnell was good.
he was like,
O'Donnell Sean. That's not a very good song either. O'Donnell Sean? Really? Yeah,
I don't know.
But anyway, yeah, the Sharks' effort was a thousand times better. So, 1 point to the Sharks.
It's pretty funny. Yeah. Auntie Niemi wins my favorite of that video because you can't understand what the hell he's saying. And he, you know, he clearly thinks it's hilarious. I'm like, what is that? And Brent Burns just can't stop laughing throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, it's
like,
great.
He's just kind of like, can't even believe he's so happy to be in California.
Dude, let's go to some Let's go to some emails.
Okay.
Questions@dudesonhockey.com is the email address. Thank you for continuing to send us emails. Here's one from Dave. After watching Kane's stick handling demonstration in the shootout, I think we should ask the question or end the question of forward motion, etc., by creating a shot clock. You can take a single shot on net in a certain number of seconds, say 6 to 8 seconds. Clock starts when you touch the puck. And then if the puck isn't in the net when the clock reaches zero, it's considered a missed shot. This will allow players to do whatever crazy things they want within the time, including wraparounds. What do you think, dude?
I think it's fair.
I think it's actually a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to see a wraparound play. Yeah, you know, if you could do like that whole lacrosse thing, and there's a PS, did you catch the lacrosse shot by the kid in the first intermission of the Oilers-Sharks game? I missed that. But yeah, you could do the like, whole Mike leg lacrosse thing that people do. Yeah, if you can do all that crazy stuff.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah,
that's well done, Dave.
Because some people were all... I mean, that Patrick Kane video, whether or not you hate Patrick Kane, that was a pretty impressive display of stick handling. And I think someone said that, you know, I mean, he just left the goalie, like left his jock on one side of the ice and he was on the other side.
Yeah.
It was pretty impressive. And so for people to actually argue about a rules violation during that display says to me that maybe the rule should be changed because, I mean, you want players doing that kind of stuff. I mean, that's the best part of the shootout. Right? That's what you want to see in the shootout. You don't want to see like some guy just skate straight towards the goalie and then stick handle a certain way and the referee blows a whistle and says, no, you went backwards or something. You know, who cares?
Right.
I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, stuff. Agreed.
All right, dude. Let's go to the other email. Let's see what we got here. Actually, Gabe tweeted us and said he's heartbroken that my Twitter handle did not get mentioned during the pod. And it's Ultra Gabe. So, Gabe, there you go. A little late.
Yeah.
There it is.
Merry Christmas, Gabe.
Merry Christmas, Gabe. I'm feeling very generous this
year.
Here
we go.
All right. Here's one. Dudes, a couple weeks ago, I was on the verge of sending you an email about Father Time catching up to Dan Boyle. He was a step behind defensively, routinely slipped and fell, and had to take several penalties.
Now we know why.
Now we know why, because he had a broken foot.
Way to be sensitive, Jim.
He had a broken foot and... a stick that was too long. I might not say. However, to say this, his play wasn't hurting the team is simply not realistic. Off the top of my head, I can think of 4 goals that went the other way because of a slip and fall or a horrific pass off of his stick. The fact that he doesn't see it isn't surprising. Every athlete believes he can go out and make up for the errors. But this does bring up some questions. Is a broken foot Boyle so much better than anyone else in the entire organization that not only does he not miss a game, but his minutes aren't reduced at all? And 2, Dan Boyle is 35. If the Sharks don't have faith in Demers, Braun, or anybody else, what happens when time does catch up with him? Or a season-ending injury on an aging body? Burns was brought in to be the number 2. I feel he could be moved up to number 1, but then you need a number 2 again. So, oh, and this is just Jim, formerly Jim from Section 202. And he says, no tickets this year. Our youngest had the audacity to desire a higher education. What a prick. Okay, so that's an excellent postscript, Jim. I appreciate that. You know,
Charlie Coyle don't read so good.
No, the thing about Boyle is it's his job and all athletes want to play. So I don't think any of this is on Boyle himself. As Jim mentioned, if he's got a broken foot and he wants to play on it and the doctors say it's okay and McClellan puts him in the game, then yeah, I mean, sure, he's not 100%, but actually I do think he's probably better than Matt Irwin, to be honest, without seeing him in the NHL.
Sure, I think he's better than Matt Irwin, but should he really be playing 26 minutes?
Right.
Like, couldn't he have been shaved down to 24? You know, we haven't seen... I think what Jim's saying is it is true, is that Burns was brought in here to take some of the pressure off of Boyle, at least that was my understanding,
mm-hmm.
was that Boyle's minutes might go from 28 to 24,
mm-hmm.
and that Burns might be playing 23, 24 minutes himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's not happening.
You know,
Boyle's still taking the lion's share of the minutes, and we're not really seeing that. It's the same minute distribution, just a different player playing it in mm-hmm. Burns. So I do think that's an issue, and it might not be as big an issue now that Boyle's health and stick have kind of been ironed out, but down the road, you know, you'd like to see that evened out a little bit more, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's certainly fair to say. And I don't think Boyle's culpable for any of this, but you're right. I mean, you gotta, if a guy's hurt, then maybe you shouldn't play him as much. It seems kind of obvious, maybe.
We've seen so many players, including Nick Lidstrom, play, you know, into their 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Boyle is a gamer. He's been relatively healthy his whole career, except for that fluky wrist injury that
right.
wasn't even like a game-related situation, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I could definitely see him being a guy that's going to play effectively, you know, into his late 30s, you mm-hmm. know, early 40s, you know, before he starts coaching a team. I was thinking about this last night. I mean, he just seems like a guy that you wouldn't be surprised if he ends up, you know, being a coach somewhere.
Could happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard. That seems to be one of the hardest predictors, though, is predicting great players that turn into decent coaches, because you look at Wayne Gretzky and it's like,
How about you look at Randy Carlyle and you go, fired?
Yeah. Or Larry Robinson, fired. Okay, maybe not a good example.
Ah, dude, there's been some good player coaches. There's been some good player coaches.
No, there has. And you know, 24/7, Pierre LaViolette played 12 games in the NHL.
That's right. Hey, I can't wait to see next week when he chokes Steve Ott.
Dude, I can't wait to see that. Okay, this is bringing us to our Christmas wishes.
Yes.
So I'm going to start some Christmas music.
That's right. Every year we make our three Christmas wishes.
Yeah.
And
let's see what we can do here.
Let's see what we got to do.
All right, dude. Here we are. Christmas wishes. What's your first wish, dude?
Dear Santa, dearest, kindest, fattest Santa, this Christmas, what I would like to find under the tree in February is Buffalo Sabres forward Paul Gostad.
You're aiming high this year.
Wrapped up in a bow in a Sharks jersey on the third line. Dear Santa, I've been a good boy. Please deliver.
Dear sweet baby Santa. You know what I would really like this Christmas? Is I would like the Carrie Fraser book regifted to me. Oh, wait, that came true. Doug gave me the Carrie Fraser book that he won at my Christmas party. So I'm one for one so far on Christmas wishes, dude.
Dude, it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Dude, wish two.
Dearest Noel, what I would love this Christmas season is a glass of cold eggnog and for Tori Mitchell to stop being promising and start being useful. I said it.
You did say it.
I said it.
Kind of a harsh Christmas.
Sorry, dude. I'm just speaking the truth on Christmas.
Dude, this Christmas, I'm going to wish, you know, in lieu of last night, that Daryl Sutter will find some joy in the Kings losing again and again and again. Because he doesn't seem to find any joy in anything.
They score, he makes the bitter beer face. They give up a goal, he makes the bitter beer face. I love watching him get to the coaching bench by basically holding on to the rear of the trainer's pants and being dragged across the ice. That was funny. Okay.
Okay.
Dear Santa, I would love to see somewhere in this great country of ours on Christmas morning, Mike Ribeiro, Steve Ott, and Patrick Kane all go downstairs in their jammies, and beside the milk and cookies they left out for you, Kris Kringle, they find that Santa has taken a big red in their hockey gloves.
Dude, I gotta bleep that out now. This is Christmas. And happy, I'm bleeping stuff?
Happy holidays, you jerks.
Dude, I'm gonna end this up on a nicer note.
Oh.
And this is sort of related to my comment a couple minutes ago. Dude, I want Santa to bring me 12 episodes a year of 24/7.
Oh, it's the best show
it
ever.
It is the best.
With the universe.
I want.
The Husky is like a beautiful blonde woman. You know what I'm saying?
That show is the best. I want more episodes of that show.
Defenseman, block pucks, no equipment. Who's crazy now?
Who's crazy? They're crazy. I'm not crazy. They're crazy. Dude, but most of all, we wish for whatever we wish. The same thing we wish for every year for the Sharks.
A Stanley Cup. All right, dude. Well, we've reached the end. We'll be world travelers. Well, maybe not the world, but we'll be going to the other side of the United States. But we'll be back in the new year. The final podcast of 2011, dude. happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody.
See you on the airplane in about 36 hours. And, dude, hopefully when we get back, the Sharks will still be up to their winning ways. Some big tests against Vancouver. I'm looking forward to those games. I'm really hopeful that they're going to be able to play like they've played the last week and stand up to the Canucks and show them that this is going to be different in 2012, dude. Sharks are going all the way.
But we're still in 2011. I'd like to thank everybody for listening, making this a successful podcast. And we really appreciate it. Really appreciate your communications and emails and everything like that. And we hope to give you another good year of podcasting.
Amen.
Go Sharks.
Bye.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.